But first to Bob McChesney, the author of several widely read books on democracy and the media. Recently, he and John Bellamy Foster discussed in Monthly Review the causes of the ongoing economic crisis and the role of financialization. They pointed out that if the Great Recession has leveled off before plunging into the depths of a second Great Depression, it has nonetheless left the U.S. and world economies in shambles. Official U.S. unemployment is over 9%, while real unemployment, taking into account all of those wanting jobs plus part-timers desiring full-time work, is close to twice that, so close to 18%. Well, last week, Bill Resnick talked with Bob McChesney, and he started by asking him to define financialization and to explain what role it had in causing the Great Recession.
Sure. Financialization refers to the process by which in our economy today, a much larger portion of economic activity, of profits, is being generated in the credit sector by banks, by insurance companies, and even in real estate. That's really part of the process. And that what we see is a massive increase in what's considered speculation and the driving up of asset values, while the actual real economy of goods and services plays a smaller role in the economy. And one way that financialization always works is what the other side of financialization is a huge increase in debt in an economy relative to the real economy. So debt is a percentage of gross domestic product. All types of debt, but especially private and personal debt in the last 30 years, increased dramatically because increased financialization is increased speculation and increased debt. Yeah, a lot of people argue that financialization is the cause of our problems. It's led to this massive speculative bubble of asset prices that were grotesquely overpriced, and that when they burst, as they did in 2007 and 2008, it drags down the entire economy, much like it did in the Great Depression. And that had we not pursued the financialization course, had that not become such a big part of capitalism starting in the 1980s and through to the present day, we wouldn't have had this crisis and everything would be fine. We'd be back with the good old days of the golden age of capitalism. Our argument, and I think the evidence is incontrovertible here, is that that's nonsense, that financialization was not like some disease that came along and corrupted an otherwise healthy and vibrant capitalist economy. Instead, financialization was a response to the stagnation and crisis of capitalism of the 70s. And I think that listeners who are our age, Bill, will remember that starting in the early 1970s and throughout that decade, it was a decade in which the capitalist economy was in the darkest moments it had faced since the 1930s. And there was a combination of massive inflation, price inflation on one hand, with high unemployment and stagnant growth. And the traditional toolkits governments had used to address those problems since the 1940s, and address them fairly successfully, I might add, were no longer working. It simply wasn't happening. And the fear at that time, and I think a legitimate fear, was that capitalism was about to enter a period of very slow growth, high unemployment, uncertainty, with probably not good political consequences for those that sit atop a capitalist society. And financialization was the way out of that problem. By dramatically increasing debt, it was able to keep the economy growing at a much higher clip than would have been the case otherwise. And I think that explains much of the economic growth of the past 25 years has come through this huge increase in debt and speculation, which has also meant that while you've had sort of a degree of economic growth, Bill, what we've seen is the other side of the coin, which is we've had a massive increase of inequality that we've seen that real wages for the great bulk of Americans have barely increased in the last 30 years. And the almost all the economic income growth in our economy since 1980 has gone to the top 10% of the population. And within that, the vast majority has gone to the top 1% or even 0.1%. So financialization has, in fact, while it saved the economy to a certain extent, it also exacerbated problems and made them much larger, put us in the situation we're in today, where the future of capitalism, by any sane account, is a grim one.
let's talk about sort of the origins of it. I mean, there's always been a big financial sector, and in fact, it's necessary to keep moving the money around and creating some debt so that the economy can keep growing. It seems to me in the 70s, though, during the stagnation, rich people were still getting rich. There was vast amounts of money being made, and particularly by the oil powers, but many other people were getting very rich, but there was nothing to invest in. There was no point in building another auto plant or, in fact, doing many things because there just wasn't sort of demand for it. And that money had to go somewhere, and the banks had to figure out how do we attract that money and, in fact, then give returns on it. And it seems to me that was part of the sort of the mechanism through which financialization grew and grew and kept growing because the rich kept getting richer doing these manipulative things and creating this debt. And so it just kept going. What do you think of that hypothesis?
Well, if that's a true-false question, the answer is true. You're absolutely right. Your analysis is dead on. You know, I think what I would add to that is that this sort of permanent crisis of modern capitalism is the inability to find investment outlets to invest capital, which leads to capital sitting on the sidelines or going into speculation, workers being unemployed, and it exacerbates the problem, becomes a downward spiral. And this was the issue that was faced in the 1970s, and it's the issue we face very much today. It's the central crisis, or Marxist theorists call contradiction of capitalism. And what happened, but to put it in some context, financialization or finance always plays an important role in any economy, frankly, but certainly a capitalist economy, because its job is to channel the savings of society to productive investment outlets. So all the people who save put their money in the financial system, and the financial system allocates it to the most, theoretically allocates it to the most useful investment uses. So it's a very necessary function in any economy. But what happens in a capitalist economy is that there's tremendous temptation by capitalists, by investors, and people wanting to get rich, to use the financial system and speculation to get rich really quickly without actually having to build a factory or hire workers through shuffling paper. And this temptation increases dramatically when there are fewer real investment opportunities out there. And this is one of the major factors, Bill, that led to the Great Depression and the huge financial collapse of 1929, 30, 31. It was a result of that in the late 30s and 1940s, the United States and most of the countries of the world installed very strict restrictions on the financial sector to prevent there ever being another financial meltdown that would drag down the real economy. And all these measures that were put in place in the 1940s, led by John Maynard Keynes, the brilliant economist who was a ferocious foe of financialization and debt and the credit system, these measures that were put in place kept us from having any financial problems at all into the 70s. The economy, capitalist economy of the world from the 40s to 70s barely had any financial meltdowns or bubbles. And it was tremendous pressure from Wall Street, from the financial sector, that led to the great relaxation of all sorts of financial regulations starting in the 70s and through the 80s and 90s to the point that by the end of the 90s we barely had any regulations of any meaning yet. And the entire financial sector had grown exponentially, dramatically, with all sorts of new crazy debt instruments that no one even really understood and created this massive swelling of debt and speculation.
Yeah,
had to plummet.
Right, all soaking up wealth, though. In fact, all of that, there really was real wealth went into these things, and during the collapse, it ended. And all of those resources that it represented could have been used for other purposes, that is, for restoring the environment, for creating better educational systems, for all of the needs that, for, in fact, rebuilding the infrastructure of the U.S. that's crumbling. It seems to me that that's one cost. Another cost, it seems to me, is that once the financiers take over going enterprises, I mean, some of these corporations and the companies and businesses are, in fact, producing things that are necessary. But once they take over, they milk the companies for the profits. That is, financial people take over rather than production people. It seems to me those processes have to then, financialization is really a poison on an economy once it gets
in. Well, again, if that's a true-false question, Bill, I'm going to give you another true.
Oh, good. I'm.
You're two for two. I think you're absolutely right. And I think the real question for us as Americans and as citizens of the world, and the really important debate that needs to be had is, can we reform capitalism? Can we take our currently existing economic system and can, through reforms, through regulation of the financial sector, through aggressive public spending of the Keynesian variety in infrastructure, in education, in health care, in transportation and communication, in green jobs, can you still have an economy that's driven by people seeking profit, large corporations and wealthy individuals driving the process, and have a healthy, vibrant economy that can live at peace with the environment and have a future? And that's the great debate. I think on one side are the liberals and the Keynesians, Paul Krugman, Joe Stiglitz, Jamie Galbraith, who argue that, you know, indeed capitalism is in a deep crisis and has some serious problems, but you can keep the best of capitalism, the free market, which they like, with all sorts of Keynesian solutions. And the other side of the coin are people like myself and John Foster, who think that, on one hand, the political willpower to do that in our corrupt political system is going to be extraordinarily difficult to win those reforms. But capitalism is so driven by the profit system that even those reforms, if you somehow could implement them, would eventually butt up against the needs of the owners to make profit, and they would produce all sorts of other problems. The system itself has got inherent flaws in it. And really, if there's going to be a solution for us as a species, we've got to somehow get past this economic system at some point, or we're going to face problems we don't want to face.
Yeah, I'll give you a true for that. There seems to be another side of it, though, as well, that even if we were able to restore the system as it existed in the 60s and early 70s and high growth processes, what we run into is global warming and other environmental threats. It just, a system of exponential growth, which is capitalism, and under financialization is the extreme of it, as it runs out of investment, you know, very profitable investments. It seems to me a system of exponential growth is ultimately going to, in fact, exhaust all of our ecosystems and poison all of us. It seems to me that what we can see is that the days of this system are numbered, but maybe our days are numbered unless we organize to, in fact, change the way we use our wealth.
Well, you know, Frederick Jameson famously said that it's easier for most people to think of the extinction of our species, the end of humanity, than it is for them to think of the end of capitalism. And I think that very much captures the dilemma we face now, which is, you're right, the way capitalism worked, needing compound annual growth rate of, say, 3% annually to really survive and be a credible system. That's what it needs. The ability to do that effectively, even taking out the environmental factor altogether, just even worry about the environment, say that's not a factor at all, the ability to do that right now looks virtually impossible for the visible future. If you study capitalism and how it grows, it just doesn't. That's just not in the cards. Then you put in the environmental cost and damage that such growth entails, or even lower growth entails, and it becomes frankly absurd. So, what we need to have is a pretty candid conversation about whether this economy is really satisfactory. I think that's a conversation, regrettably, that the people who run our society, who benefit by the status quo, are in no hurry to encourage whatsoever, but that only redoubles the need for all of us to work at that issue.
You know, Bob, let me have the last word. Thanks so much for talking to us. And the last word is, let me see if I get a 3 for 3 on true or falses, is that one thing that has happened over the last 100 years is we've developed the technologies, actually, and the capacity, technologies both social and productive. That is, we can live together to create a very, very different steady state economy in which everybody can live comfortably. For example, in the energy sector, we really could live on sun and wind energy quite well without polluting. And it's true in agriculture, too. There are all of the possibilities are there, and we know how to set up cooperative kinds of production and democratic societies, although they're very difficult. It's not the technology at all. It's not the know-how. It's all politics now. True or false?
True again. You're really on a roll.
I know. I'm 3 for 3. That's what you call batting 1,000. You too, Bob. Thank you very much for talking.
My great pleasure. Good luck to everyone out in Portland.
Thanks a lot.
And you are tuned to KBOO, where you just heard author and media critic Bob McChesney talking to the Old Mole's Bill Resnick here on the Old Mole Variety Hour. You know, McChesney's a big supporter of KBOO, and I'd like you to hear what he says about why it's important for you to support this listener-supported station.
Hi, this is Bob McChesney. I'm calling you, talking to you today from the Midwest. I travel the country all the time, and one of the things I've noticed in every city I go to is the quality of the local media, especially the community radio station. One of the great thrills whenever I go to Portland is getting to listen to KBOO, to meet the people who work at the station, to talk to people in the community, see how they relate to the station. And it is an oasis, literally, in a desert in the media system of Oregon and in this country. You're very privileged to have a station like KBOO. And I can tell you, as one who's lived in cities without a station like KBOO, if you ever lose a station like that, you'd pay anything to get it back. So you've got it right now. Don't take it for granted. Give it all the support you possibly can. We can build a much better country and a much better media system, but we need all hands on deck. It starts with you. Contribute and support KBOO.